Welcome to the second episode of the Empowering Partners for Improved Care EPID podcast. Each month, you will hear informative interviews about patients, family, and staff engagement initiatives, including barriers and proven practices that may impact your own interventions. I, Jesse Cubillo, Patient Engagement Specialist for ESRD Network 3, will be your host. And today, we will be talking about a patient's experience as active participants in their facility's monthly QAPI meetings. With us today, our guests are William Sr. and Wayne Mayuri, who are both in-center dialysis patients at two different centers or facilities in New Jersey. Hey, Bill and Wayne, just a heads up first. You're going to hear me call William, because that's what we know him as.
Yeah.
So we're going to call you from now on Bill, as I already started doing from the beginning of this recording. But welcome, Bill and Wayne. Thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Jesse. How are you?
Thanks for having us.
Great. So let's start with the both of you. I want to hear a little bit about, tell us a little bit about your journey as dialysis patients and where are you today in your journey as dialysis patients?
Sure. Bill, do you want to go first or would you
go ahead, Wayne? Go ahead.
Okay. Well, mine is, I guess, fairly simple, a little complex at the same time, but I was born with polycystic kidney disease. And in 2012, I had been on the transplant list for about 6 years, and I received a kidney transplant back in 2012. Fortunately, my wife was my kidney donor at the time. We were not perfect matches, but we were compatible. And my kidney lasted 5 years, and I lost it to rejection, unfortunately. But during that time, I had a lot of surgeries and also am now 100% antibody, which means I have had a lot of transfusions. Have a lot of antibodies, so to get a new kidney is quite difficult, but there's some new rulings out now that allow me a better perspective to have that happen. So I'm looking forward to it. I've been back now about 6 years, been in dialysis, and things are going well. So, I'm looking forward to hopefully finding a new kidney, because that was the greatest 5 years of my life. I'm not kidding you. So, Bill, how was your experience?
Well, I started out probably, well, the day that my primary care physician said I had a creatinine level of 1.8. He said, uh-oh. I'm like, uh-oh, I never heard him say that before. He said, don't tell me you have kidney disease. And he said, I'm going to have to send you to a nephrologist. And so I went to a nephrologist and he said, okay, you have kidney disease and slowly but surely you're going to need to be on dialysis. Mm-hmm. So that made me, it didn't make me feel good, but I was actually hoping that there was some way I could prolong that process. And a few years later, I was on dialysis and I started out on PD. A peritoneal where they put the catheter in the stomach, and I got a hernia after 1 year, almost to the day that I started. And then I've been on hemo ever since. And I'm looking for the day that I can get off of dialysis. I thrived on it. I'm thriving on it. I'm living. And I understand it's necessary to keep me alive. But I want to come off of it.
Yeah, and you're currently going through the process as well, Bill, for transplant, right? To get listed for transplant and everything.
Yes, I am. I've been on a transplant list before, and I was inactive, and then they rejected me because of low blood pressure. Now I'm on a at another place on the transplant list, and I am inactive because they said I had an infection. I was actually being prepped for surgery for a kidney transplant. They said I had an infection. They never found it, but I've done everything I've been required to do to get back on active on the transplant list. And I did the last thing as far as I know. So I'm waiting to hear from them. So I can't, I'm waiting for the day where I get a kidney.
Yeah, and just let me add a little bit too that you guys didn't mention. Both of you are active members of our Patient Advisory Council, Patient and Family Advisory Council, the PFAC. And you guys have been with us many, many years. Bill is actually our chair, been our chair for quite some time as well. And Wayne has been with us, very active participation with us as well at the network level. So I really appreciate having this opportunity to kind of chat and discuss a little bit of the work that you've been doing in your facility. You've seen the journey of patient engagement in QAPI meetings throughout the years, and you've been a part of that. And that's why I thought it would be important for others to hear about that journey that you've gone through, not just in your personal dialysis experience, but as well in your center and how you've brought your own experiences to the table in those discussions. So today we will cover two areas. One of them is going to be your first impression when being invited to the QAPI meetings and that first experience in participating in a QAPI meeting. I know that was a while back for many of you, for both of you, but let's get a little bit deeper into those first experiences. And also the second part is, how was your role involved at the facility? How has your role evolved at your facility as a patient representative or a subject matter expert, which is what we call you guys? So let's start off by talking about that first impression. Let's talk about, how were you guys first introduced to joining to the QAPI meetings, and how did you hear about QAPI meetings and that participation in the QAPI meetings?
I can start off with this one. I was told by the social worker at my center. I didn't know what a QAPI meeting was. I didn't, I had no idea. But she saw that I was, you know, active. I asked a lot of questions. I was trying to help patients. So she said, maybe you want to be part of this QAPI meeting. Well, I said, sure. I mean, I was excited about it. But I think initially it wasn't something that the center cared about too much, or it seemed that they were a little bit nervous. What did I want to attend the QAPI meetings for? What was I going to ask? They were giving me statements like, you know, you would be getting information about patients and that's illegal. HEPA would be against this. Yeah. And I didn't agree. And then I talked to you, Jesse, on the network, and you sent me some questions to put to them and just to interact with them like as best I could. And next thing I know, I'm in the QAPI meeting. And it started, I usually start the QAPI meeting and I'm there like 10, 15, 20 minutes, and then I'm out, you know. And I was nervous the first time. Everybody looking at me, what is he going to say? But I did have questions, and, they seemed very receptive to him, actually, especially the head nephrologist. And so I was glad I was there.
Nice. How about you, Wayne?
I'm very similar. I had no clue. I had no idea what a QAPI meeting was. But my center manager came to me and had suggested that I attend their monthly meeting. She said, I talked to the, we have a nephrologist that comes in every other week, and his assistant comes in every week. So obviously I have a lot of conversations with them. And that's how I guess they spoke to the center manager and suggested maybe I attend this meeting. So when they told me, would you like to attend the QAPI meeting? I thought they were kidding, because, you know, QAPI, what's QAPI mean? You know, but it was their monthly association meeting. And I've been attending now for a couple years. And at first I felt I was attending for, I guess, being a voice for complaints to other patients, because at the time it was before COVID, when we would meet in the lobby and talk and, you know, have discussions about what was going on, who thought what, and for some reason they would voice them to me, you know. So that's what I felt like I was at first. But since then, it has really evolved into, I think, a good relationship between the ones that associate the nephrologist, the doctors, I mean, the center manager and all others that attend, I think there's been a relationship we've built now of honesty and trust. And now there's a lot of conversation and we talk about a lot of different things and they allow me to make a lot of different recommendations. Now, I'm not saying they're all accepted, but they at least allow me to talk about it. So it's been very good. It's been really good. And, you know, I can go into detail of things, but
we'll get to that in a minute. I appreciate that. But I wanted to hear you guys share what was that first experience kind of being invited to the meeting. But I think what we often hear from patients that are initially participating or the staff themselves when they're participating into the meetings is they don't know what that first meeting is going to be like, what to expect from that first meeting. Did you personally feel prepared when you went to that first SQAPI meeting? What do you think could have been done a little better? Or what would you suggest to others and say, hey, if you do this, I would have probably felt better joining a SQAPI meeting. So from that first experience, can you recall what could have been done a little differently or what was done that actually helped you feel better joining that SQAPI meeting the very first time?
Bill, it's up to you. Would you like me or?
Sure.
I felt what I did was the right thing to do. I listened. I didn't come in blasting with guns about problems and so forth. I listened to what went on and I spent I'd say 90% of the meeting just listening to what they had to say and what they wanted to talk about. So when I got into the conversation, it was what the conversation should have been about, not my complaints, my ideas, my thoughts and so forth. That's what I brought to the meeting after that first meeting. Because then I looked to, I guess to kind of modify what I needed to say. And one part of that was bringing our meetings, our conference calls that we have, bringing them to the meeting and associating everyone who is attending to what we talk about. And I think they really appreciated that.
Yeah, it's kind of like building bridges between what you as the facility representative and also being at the network level, participating with us and hearing some of the work and ideas that we're coming up with and that you guys are giving to us, bringing that back to the facility, build some of those bridges. And
yeah, they hear enough complaints. We don't need to deal with, I mean, we bring complaints, but they're brought in a different way.
Yeah, good.
I wanted to really put them at ease that this was not going to be a complaint session from me relaying complaints. And I think that made them relax a little bit. You know, I just told them, I mainly talked about, at least at the initial meeting, about patients that didn't know why they were there and how I thought they should talk to them and just, you know, help them to understand that it was important that they were on dialysis to live. And one young lady would talk to me and she would say, I don't know why I'm here. It's too much time out of my life. You know, I have a family. And, you know, that made me feel really, you know, I was sad. And I'm like, how come she doesn't understand this? Don't they get information or... She may have gone into, I think she went into the hospital and next thing she knew she was on dialysis. And, you know, so anyway, there were more than one patient like that. And I just told them that, you know, I heard this and maybe there would be a way that communication could be better to, they could understand why they're there and why they need to stay there and the importance of being on dialysis. And they understood that, you know, so.
Yeah, you hear that very often, too, that a lot of patients start dialysis straight from the hospital. They didn't have a chance to hear what their options were, home dialysis, transplant, anything. They're just, you know, straight from the hospital going to the center. So it's a very overwhelming experience. And Bill, you serve to that patient as a peer mentor, which is, you know, another program that we're working on. But this is way before we were working on this program. You as a patient were able to serve as that go-to person that another patient felt entrusted to be able to hear from your personal experience and kind of hear and say, rather than a doctor or a nurse or another facility staff, it was from a peer like her to hear what some words of encouragement and guidance during that period of time, difficult period of time in her life. So that was important. That's part of the discussions that you were having with your team in those cooperative meetings. So I think it's twofold. You're not just going there to hear what they're doing, but you're there also to kind of provide some support and guidance on other things that the facility might not be aware of. So that's great. I think that's great. Another thing I wanted to kind of talk to you guys about was, now that you've been participating in these co-op meetings for quite some time, Bill, you shared with me back when we were doing other projects with the network, you were doing the audits, the infection audits at your facility too. So you've been very involved and when bringing back feedback to your facility in regards to the work that we're doing at the network. But what other topics are you guys talking about nowadays? What topics are you talking about during your co-op meetings, and what discussions are happening, and what is the team sharing with you during those co-op meetings?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think an example is, and first and foremost, I think it's important to note this, they have regulations that they have to live by, and HIPAA is really one of the main ones. Mm-hmm. So understanding what they're allowed to say and what they're allowed to talk about in front of you and what they're not, I think it's important to understand. You know, no names, no one talks about specific names in these meetings. Yeah. I don't, they don't in front of me while I'm there. And I think that's important to respect that, because they really have to have major guidelines that they have to live by. Now, one of the things that we're talking about is, I had made a recommendation back a while ago about having a tape put on, that we do a tape and put it on the TVs, because every once a month they go through emergency specifics about what you can do during an emergency, what you're supposed to do, what you're allowed to do, how you can remove yourself, where you need to go. And I said, you know, that's all well and good when you talk to us about that, but if everyone saw that once a week on the TV and we just played it, I think that would give a better imprint in their mind of what they should be doing in case of that emergency. And we never know when it's going to come. Yeah. So what we've done now is we've participated in planning to put this tape together. Now, we had to go through a lot of things to get corporate to recognize it and to approve it and so on and so forth. But that's all being done. It's taken a while. But now in the meeting I had yesterday, they said, you know, they talked to, I guess, the audio person about what's the exact tool now we need to do this. And that's where we're at. So there's a lot of things come out of these meetings. If they're good recommendations and you have a group that wants to listen to planning new things and helping.
So. I think that's a great idea, Wayne, and bringing that education to the forefront and mm-hmm. having that, you know, replay and that capability, something that you already have at the facility, making use of it. Yes. and improving some of that education that you're doing. I think that's a great, great way of approaching. And you brought that idea to the team and they're running with it and they're going with it with you and making those improvements. So I think that's great to hear. How about you, Bill?
Well, one thing I can remember talking about was starting a support group for the center. Mm-hmm. And they love the idea. I actually had another person with me as an SME, and we wrote out a proposal, or he wrote the proposal, and they thought it was a good idea. The nephrologist, head nephrologist, he thought it was a good idea, and that shocked me. He said, "I'll be on there. I'll support you," and I just thought that was a wonderful idea, because, you know, I don't get a chance to talk to a lot of patients, but I talk to as many as I can. If I see someone new, I'll talk to them. And Then it got to a point where the social worker would say, "Bill, somebody wants to talk to you." And I said, "Well, maybe they can join the support group." And they're like, "Yes, they want to talk." Well, what happened was people were calling me outside of the support group, and I would talk to them for hours. And when the support group started, they weren't part of it. And so, I mean, that's basically the way it's gone, you know. But I just like the idea, and I know people need support, and I'm not saying people are depressed, but they just sometimes they want to know somebody's going through the same thing they are, you know. And I call it a family. I really believe that we're in a family, you know, and there are a lot of people that have kidney disease and just need to talk and support one another.
Yeah, and I've seen that too, Bill. Like, there are, it's all on the personality of the person too, how comfortable they feel sharing or being part of a group versus one-to-one with another, with a mentor, and kind of speaking to them one-to-one. They feel a lot more comfortable just kind of opening up in a one-to-one setting than opening up in a group setting. And that's why you may be seeing that. So it's good to see that. But a big takeaway that I take from what you both share is that you have the medical director of the center involved in you being a participant in this COAPI meetings, in the activities that you guys are suggesting that happen at the center. You have the staff involved, but that medical director is backing you guys up and supporting the work that you guys are doing together with the team. So I think that's great. And that's what motivates and continues that engagement at the facility level, which oftentimes, as you said at the beginning, many don't see the benefits of having a patient, or why do we have a patient participate in the COAPI meetings? What's the benefit of having a patient participate in the COAPI meeting? And that's exactly what we're talking about. The fact that you guys are able to bring from the patient's perspective some interventions that they might have not thought about is the importance of having that patient voice. So like saying, talk about the patient without the patient. What are you really doing there, right? So to have that input, I think is very, very important. I wanted to talk to you guys a little bit more about some of the biggest barriers, because I know you guys have been doing patient engagement in COAPI meetings for quite some time, even before COVID happened, as you mentioned. And then through COVID, I know you guys probably like stepped away a little bit because that in-person participation wasn't allowed anymore. Did you guys start participating via teleconference, or did you take a pause in between? Did you do a mix of teleconference in person? How did that work during that period?
Mine was only in person. Okay. I never did a teleconference. We did in person. No, I'm sorry. That's not true, because a couple times we did a couple phone conferences during the height, I guess, of COVID. Yeah. But most of the time I started in person, and that's where we're at again. I think that's so beneficial. And just to mention a barrier, I think the main barrier is the group all thinking that you're there as a patient advocate and not to recommend improvements in the center. Now, obviously, you need a center manager, and fortunately, I do, that is open to almost anything. Wonderful person, okay, and very caring. And to know that what I'm talking about is only to improve the center and all of their jobs. So them being open to that, I think, is very important. And knowing that you're not only the advocate, like I said, because coming in and with guns blazing about all the problems is not the way to achieve their trust and their support. Yeah. So I think that's what needs to be done.
Well said. Bill?
Could you ask the question?
Yeah, no problem. So during the pandemic, I know we took some space in between participating in the facility. Many participated via teleconference. Others participated in person when things settled down a little bit. As Wayne mentioned, his facility started implementing teleconference. And as well, like, what are some of the biggest barriers maybe you identified in that continued patient engagement or your participation at the facility, whether it be new staff working in the center, and how to roll that in, that continued participation from a patient's perspective? How did that continue happening? So just wanted to hear from you a little bit about that.
Yeah, the first thing I thought about was COVID, because I used to go there every month and be in person. But after COVID affected everyone, then for a while, we weren't meeting at all. And then they started doing teleconferencing. And that's what we do now. But I noticed that most of the people that I started with or the administration that was there is gone.
Yeah.
Even the social worker. We have a new social worker, but now she is just now really getting being dedicated to our center. She was going around to two or three centers, and it wasn't the same, but she is now very active. And we've talked about me being back involved in the QAPI meetings. I probably haven't really attended a QAPI meeting on teleconference for 5 months.
Okay.
And I just think the administration just sort of lost me, but I think that's changed. The other day I had a meeting with a nephrologist, and he said, hopefully you'll be there next month. Another barrier sometimes is they change the meeting dates. And that's been a hindrance to me because I make appointments and I have other meetings. And I'm like, you know, if we can't start at the start time, I could come in later, or I could just talk to you and you bring the question there. But I don't want to keep doing that. I want to hear my voice. Not that I'm so important, but the patient's voice is important. And, you know, I'm representing the patients. And you know, there were just some things that happened that, you know, was a hindrance to not being able to attend.
And I think, Bill, as you mentioned, just that change in schedules, it's something that I hear from the facility staff themselves. You know, oftentimes the meetings are rescheduled multiple times, but the fact that now the nephrologist or the medical director knows that a patient will be there kind of holds them a little more accountable to being able to maintain or hold on to that scheduled meeting, because they know how difficult it is for you to make it there as well and travel back to the center to be a part of that meeting. So I think some facility staff are actually appreciative of the fact that they now have that patient engagement and they're able to kind of continue that, having that steady kind of meeting schedule with the medical director. But it all falls back. We come back is the medical director, you know, providing that support. And as you said, you lost that contact with the staff for a period of time because there was a turnover of staff in your center, which we saw, we've been seeing in throughout many dialysis centers as a result of the pandemic. And now you are starting to kind of regroup with that new team in your center by bringing your voice and saying, hey, I was here actively participating. I would like to continue with that participation and that engagement. And then your nephrologist, your medical director was able to acknowledge that, yes, you are an important member of our team. And yes, we do look forward to having you in future meetings. I think that's important. It's not one person's responsibility, right, to follow up and make sure that you are part of that interdisciplinary team during those discussions, but it's a responsibility of everyone, medical director, social work, dietitian, social worker, everyone that's part of that team, the nurse and everyone. So my last question to you guys is, and something maybe you can share as a words of motivation, what could you share as a learned practice that has strengthened your relationship with the facility's interdisciplinary team? As you've engaged in these QAPI meetings, what has made from that beginning meeting, that first meeting that you started at the center to today, what do you feel has strengthened that relationship between you and your team?
Well, I say for me is they know, one, that I care about patients. They know, two, that I care about my health and I care about what's going on in the center. And so they know now when I ask a question or I might call someone over, a tech or a nurse, and say, that person went to the supply case and they had the gloves on. Then they just came over to my machine. You know, I don't know who they touched with those gloves. I don't know. But they went to, you know, they usually go without the gloves on to the supply case. So, you know, I think before when I was talking about that, terms of hand sanitation, I think they complain. You know, they kind of like Mr. Senior. But now, you know, they ask me, have you seen what's going on there? What do you think? You know?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I think it's really grown over the years that I've been there, even though I haven't been there in like 5 months. But they just know that I'm going to have something to say. I'm going to have some questions. You know, like they use me on the hand sanitation monitoring, and they wanted me to lead that. And, you know, that made me feel real good. And I did see some things, you know, that I had to report, but, you know, I think they really appreciate the information, the feedback. So.
Right. And I think that what you're saying is building a trust between one another, that it took time for you guys to build that trust, but it happened. And once it's there, that trust now builds onto additional opportunities for you, since you're at the center looking at everything that's happened. And who else better than you to kind of provide some of that feedback, and you know, they trust you enough so that you can be able to say honestly to them, this is what happened. This is what I'm seeing. How can we make it better? Not just, hey, you guys are doing wrong. you're in trouble now with me. You're in trouble with the network or the Department of Health. Like, no, it's how can we make it better for our patients and
let's do that.
Yeah,
I think that's a very important thing. Is how can we all make things better? Again, complaining doesn't get anywhere. Advising of how to change, I think it's important. And I think building that trust, I think that's extremely important. And I have to say that what you bring to the table as far as those conference meetings, allowing us to participate in what's going on with all the different centers, I think when I bring that back to our meeting, that, hey, listen, this center is doing this and it's helping in this way. That's extremely important. And they want to hear that. They truly want to hear how to make the center better, because that's what they're reporting on. They're reporting on what goes on in their center and how they can improve, you know, patients' lives. So again, us being very honest up front and knowing they can trust us in that, I think is extremely important.
Yeah, yeah. Honesty and trust and just opening those lines of communication and giving it a chance. And kind of working together. And we have you guys as perfect examples of that happening and how it has been possible. You've jumped over some barriers yourselves to get this done and make it happen, but it is possible. And as we heard from our last podcast, from the facility's point of view, it's also possible to make it happen. So I want to thank you both. Thank you so much for being with us today, sharing your experiences, joining us. And I definitely learned a lot from the two of you, and I look forward to hearing more in the future. You'll definitely be back for future podcasts, because I know you have additional, as we heard, transplant experience and your journey and all of that. So you'll probably be back with us to share a little bit more about that in the future. But I want to thank you both for being with us today. And to our listeners out there, if you have specific topics that you want to share with us, that you want to hear a little bit more about in future podcasts, please email me at ycubillo@qualityinsights.org. I was about to give you my personal email, but no. It's almost similar, so I almost did that. But thank you all for listening to the Empowering Partners for Improved Care podcast, the Epic podcast. Stay tuned for next month's topic, and thank you both for joining us today. Take care.
Thanks for having us.
Have a great day.
Thank you, Jesse.